So much to do, so little time, so the saying goes. For many today, our attention is stretched thin by overextended schedules, unmanageable calendars, and an impossible to-do list. I'm J.Y. Kim, and in my book, The Pace of Peace, I invite you to fight distraction and focus your attention by examining your life with God. Drawing on the prayer of examine developed by Ignatius of Loyola as a framework for all of life, we'll walk through the movements of this ancient prayer practice: invitation, gratitude, reflection, confession, and looking forward, to point us toward the antidotes for the aches of our distracted age. And as a listener of this podcast, you can receive a special discount on The Pace of Peace. Check out the show notes for more details.
This episode is brought to you by IVP. Use promo code IVPEXAMINE40. That's IVPEXAMINE40 at ivpress.com to get 40% off and free US shipping on any IVP resources mentioned in this episode.
This is IVP. Biblically speaking, joy is our state of being when we are connected to God. It's God's posture to us as his beloved people. It is a result of the Spirit's work in our lives, not just something we muster or create on our own. And finally, joy is an inner steadiness built upon the goodness of God and not on circumstances. Hey, everybody. Welcome to season 3 of the Digital Examine podcast. I'm Jay, your host, and I am so grateful that you are joining us for yet another journey through the mad frenzy of life in the modern world. And our hope, as always, is that the Digital Examine is more than just a series of conversations you listen to, but that we might be able to, just in a small way, create some breathing room for you. Our episodes are designed in such a way that, again, our hope and our prayer is that the listening experience or the viewing experience itself might feel like a deep breath in a life that feels so cramped and frenzied for most of us. To begin our season, I want to start by just laying my cards out there for you. Our desire in this season is that we might, through our conversations, point you toward the possibility of real joy and delight, even in the midst of all that feels cacophonous and chaotic and out of control. To begin, I want to highlight this phrase that I came across a number of years ago. The phrase is the hedonic treadmill. It was first coined by a British psychologist named Michael Async in the late 1990s. And by hedonic treadmill, he meant what it sounds like: hedonic, meaning hedonism or the pursuit of pleasure, and a treadmill, where you are in constant motion, running, but never really getting anywhere, running, but never arriving. And what Async meant was that most people in the modern world today seem to live life on a hedonic treadmill. We are constantly chasing pleasure, the next thing that we think we need to experience real meaning, real delight and joy. But it's just a fruitless chase because we never really arrive. Maybe you get the thing that you think you absolutely need so much, and yet once you get it, you realize, man, that pleasure doesn't really lead to joy. As a pastor, having sat in those sacred spaces in the midst of people's real hurt and pain for the last 20 plus years, one of the hardest settings that I find myself in from time to time is when a marriage is on the brink of collapse. And almost every single time that I have had this experience sitting with a couple whose marriage was about to fall apart, some form, some version of this phrase comes out of the mouth of at least one, if not both parties involved. They will say something to me like, man, the spark is gone. This is the hedonic treadmill. We often mistake the spark of pleasure for deep, abiding joy. And so when the spark is gone, when the thing is no longer pleasurable, we just throw it away, be it a piece of clothing or sometimes a marriage. But pleasure is always temporary. It's always fleeting. It never feels as good 10 years down the road as it does in the initial moment of experience. And so, chasing pleasure, chasing hedonism is a treadmill. We are constantly chasing, but never arriving. And so, what God offers isn't pleasure, it's joy. So, what is joy? Joy in the Hebrew scriptures, in the Old Testament, there are several words for joy. The most common one is the Hebrew word simcha. It's found over 90 times throughout what we call the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures. And most commonly, simcha, joy, refers to a person or a people's state of being when they are in fellowship with or deep connection to God. In other words, in the Hebrew scriptures, the location of joy, simcha, is not elusive. It's clear. Psalm 16, in your presence, God, there is fullness of joy. Psalm 30, you turned my wailing into dancing. You removed my sackcloth and clothed me with joy. Now, this word simcha, joy, it also commonly refers to God's posture toward his people and his creation. Psalm 104, may the Lord simcha, rejoice in his works. Or Zephaniah 3, the Lord your God is in your midst, a warrior who gives victory. He will simcha, rejoice over you with gladness. He will renew you in his love. He will exult over you with loud singing. Now, when we get to the New Testament, the most common word for joy is the word chara. It's found over 50 times in the New Testament, and it describes the internal attribute of a follower of Jesus, the result of the Spirit's work within. One of the most famous examples is Galatians 5, the fruit of the Spirit passage, when it tells us the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, chara, and peace, and on and on. And this word chara, joy, is not contingent upon circumstances, but it's a steadiness within, built on the goodness of God, and it prevails in the midst of even suffering. Colossians 1, now I rejoice, chara, in what I am suffering for you. Hebrews 12 tells us about Jesus. We fix our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross. Biblically speaking, joy is our state of being when we are connected to God. It's God's posture to us as his beloved people. It is a result of the Spirit's work in our lives, not just something we muster or create on our own. And finally, joy is an inner steadiness built upon the goodness of God and not on circumstances. Dallas Willard puts it this way, that joy is not a passing sensation of pleasure, but a pervasive sense of well-being that is infused with hope because of the goodness of God. It's not a passing sensation of pleasure. It is a pervasive sense of well-being, and it's full of hope because it's built on the goodness of God, which is unchanging. What's interesting to me is when you look at paintings of Jesus throughout art history, and there are many, the overwhelming majority of visual representations of Jesus throughout art history depict him as this sort of glum, dour, kind of sad man nearing middle age. And to be sure, sorrow and grief were a part of Jesus's life. I mean, the messianic prophecy of Isaiah 53 tells us that there is grief and sorrow in Jesus's story. This is undeniable, but this does not preclude genuine joy from also being a significant part of Jesus's character. Dallas Willard again. One of the outstanding features of Jesus's personality was precisely an abundance of joy. And if anyone who has seen Jesus has seen God the Father, as we read in John 14, then this means that God himself is abundantly joyful. Willard, again, we should, to begin with, think that God leads a very interesting life and that he is full of joy. Undoubtedly, God is the most joyous being in the universe. This is why throughout Scripture, joy is made complete by God, and it is experienced most fully in his presence. Psalm 21, you make him glad with the joy of your presence, God. John 16, Jesus says, ask and you will receive, and your joy will be complete. Romans 15, may the God of hope fill you with all joy. Jesus was not always a glum and dour, sad man. I mean, children flocked to Jesus, which was not often the case with first century Jewish rabbis, who were for the most part quite serious. Why did children want to be around Jesus? Listen, think about children today. Kids don't like being around sour, sad, serious people. But Jesus was full of joy. John Ortberg puts it this way, that joy is God's basic character. Joy is his eternal destiny. God is the happiest being in the universe. And if joy is God's basic character, then as those made in the image of God, and especially for us as followers of Jesus, joy must become our basic character, even in the midst of trial. In James chapter 1, in the opening lines, the writer says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. That phrase, count it all joy, count it all in the Greek is a single word, hageomai. It was a mathematical term. Our friend John Mark Comer describes it this way. It means to do the math. You will realize the result of trials is often a net profit. We gain more than we lose, namely the growth of a deeper and wider and stronger soul, a character that will last past this life into the life to come. James is saying, do the mental spreadsheet. There's more profit than loss. The logical emotion is joy. As I'm recording this, just a few days ago, I went to the adoption ceremony of two of my closest friends who were adopting their second child. Stan was the best man in my wedding, and his wife, Noelle, was a bridesmaid for Jenny. And we've known them and been dear friends, the closest of friends, for over 20 years. We've been through life's many peaks and valleys and long plateaus together. And in fact, in the early years of Jenny and I, our infertility journey, Stan and Noelle were going through the same exact journey. And there was a way in which our relationship grew deeper through the shared pain of the deep, dark valley of infertility. Now, several years into that journey, Jenny and I were blessed and fortunate enough to become pregnant. And then a few years later, we had our second biological child. But during that entire time, Stan and Noel continued to traverse the dark valley of infertility. And there were many tears shed, lots of emotion and pain and shared heartbreak. And yet, through their pain and disappointment, they continued to exude a joy that moved me to no end. I mean, we sat with them in tears and in silence in that strange and beautiful place where grief and gladness meet. And to this day, we laugh more with Stan and Noel than most other people in our lives. And there's a sweetness that they have with our children that feels a bit like family. You know, when Jenny and I were struggling with infertility, honestly, all I could do was just sort of compare and despair. And I'm sure on some of their hardest days, Stan and Noel did the same, but the underpinning of their life was deep joy. And that joy was contagious. And a few days ago, as I stood in that courtroom, as the judge read the pronouncement that this little boy now was the son of this beautiful couple, with tears in his eyes, by the way, there was such joy. And it wasn't joy because Stan and Noel were parents for the second time now. There was joy because joy has always been the underpinning of their life. And this was a moment where we could celebrate in that joy together. You know, the prophet Ezra, he reads the scriptures for the people of God from daybreak till noon. In the book of Nehemiah, the story is told as the prophet Ezra in the book of Nehemiah reads the scriptures. And he reads the scriptures to the people as the people weep. And the people are weeping because they are heartbroken by their circumstances and they are convicted of their own sin. They are walking through a deep, dark valley. But then in the midst of this, he says, Nehemiah 8:10, "Do not grieve, for the joy of the Lord is your strength." For those of us today who are listening or watching with broken hearts or tired hands, may the joy of the Lord be your strength. For those who are listening or watching with weary minds or anxious souls, may the joy of the Lord be your strength. If today you find yourself ashamed of the past or fearful of the future, may the joy of the Lord be your strength. There is joy in the good times and the bad times and all the in-between. There is joy on the mountaintops and in the deep valleys and the long plateaus. Joy is possible, and it is on offer for all of us. And so may the joy of the Lord be your strength. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And I can't wait to go on the journey of season 3 of the Digital Examine podcast with you as we explore the possibility of joy in all of life, in every circumstance. The Digital Examine is a production of InterVarsity Press. For more information on any IVP titles mentioned on this episode, visit ivpress.com and use the promo code in the show notes for a special discount. Sound engineering by Honest Podcasts. Our producers are Christine Policio Mello and Travis Albritton. And I'm your host, J.Y. Kim. Don't forget to subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the IVP YouTube channel, and leave a rating and review to support the show.